Hey, you are listening to Oh Crap Parenting with me, your host, Jamie Gerlachy. This is a podcast for conscious parents who drop the F-bomb a lot. Hey, hey, welcome, welcome. Okay, so today we're going to go over some questions about the summer, about summer camps, transitioning from school to camp, and also when you have your kids at home for the summer, which will be a big change. So I had asked a question on Instagram, do you have a school-age child? Depending on where you are, schools are getting out soon. What burning questions do you have about parenting through this transition? So I'm going to read right from my phone the questions I got on Instagram, and they were awesome. Before I even begin, let's start with, I cannot possibly know every situation out there. I don't know if you live in the city. I don't know if you have a backyard. I don't know if you have separate rooms for your kids. I don't know if you have a playroom. I don't know if you have a swing set. I don't know if there's a park nearby. You know, I'm going to try to give a lot of different scenarios, but I'm going to ask you to sort of extrapolate thoughts. So a lot of times I might say, you know, something about your backyard. Don't get mad that, you know, I don't have a backyard. So, so the very first question is what to do about the endless snacking. And I also think this ties in with a big question that people have. What do I do when they're bored? What do I do when they're bored? Because I think snacking and boredom often come hand in hand. So we saw this a lot during the pandemic when we were in lockdown and we had to work from home and do everything from home. And our kids were like ravenous. And it was a huge deal. Everybody was like, oh my God, the food, right? Like the food your kids go through. So one thing we want to remember is that if your child is in daycare or preschool or elementary school, you know, we send them with a lunchbox or maybe they have food at the school, but our children are capable of not snacking constantly, right? We know that because they go to school and they're not allowed to snack constantly at school. So when they're at home, there becomes number one, availability, right? Like, oh, I can go to the fridge. I can have anything. But I think boredom often plays into it. So, but before I hit boredom, let's hit the actual food. Remember from my picky eating episode, we want to think with snacks. We want to think protein and fat forward. The reason why is because remember from my other episode with Danielle Hamilton, if you're eating a naked carb, right? So that's like a piece of fruit or crackers or pretzels, something like that without a protein and a fat, you're going to see a rise in your blood sugar. And when it dips, you're going to be hungry. So when we serve these packages of, you know, like say a single serving of Goldfish, your child's going to be very hungry very quickly. And so that is part of the snacking thing. And when I rally against snacking culture, it's not that I don't want kids to eat. They can eat whenever they're hungry. It's this idea that if they keep eating these single naked carbs, they're just going to be hungrier and you're just going to have to keep feeding them, right? So we want to think protein forward. And I think we learned during the pandemic that one of the best things, I started seeing elaborate versions of this as the lockdowns wore on, but think of like a charcuterie board for kids. And it doesn't have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be extensive, but it could be a couple of deli slices of turkey or ham or salami. It could be, you know, a couple of cubes of cheese or a string cheese, maybe little bowls of yogurt with some berries or granola or whatever you put on it. You could have sliced fruit, pieces of chicken. It could just, oh, hard-boiled eggs. I'm trying to think of like all the things. And you could just make a plate and then the child can, you know, munch on that. You can leave it out. Most of this, you know, I've left a snack board out like that for a couple of hours and it's fine. You can do cut up red bell peppers or orange bell peppers. Kids usually really love those. And if your kid is sensitive to the skin, you can quickly boil it and take the skin off. Shredded carrots. Kids love shredded carrots. With the little ones, you want to be careful that they don't choke, but there's something really fun about shredded carrots. So you could kind of make just a fun, interesting board that they can snack on all day. That's up to you. I know when I would have play dates for Pascal's friends, I would often set out a board like that and just leave it because I just didn't want to be everybody sit down at once. So you can either leave it out and they can snack all day or, you know, you can set it out and that can be mealtime. When your kids are home, I want to dispel the notion that every meal has to be a recipe, has to be a sit, not that you don't want your kids sitting down, but a sit down meal where everybody eats the same thing. simplify your life. And I literally just did an Instagram reel about how I prepare on Sunday morning. I call it self-care Sunday. And most people would be like, that's not self-care, that's work. And I even did this on Mother's Day because my energy drain goes to food. And I only have one kid and I'm only one person. So I can imagine if you have a spouse and several kids, your pain is multiplied that much more than mine. So meals are just such a drain on time. You know, you got to plan the time it takes to cook. You do a recipe and then your kid doesn't like it. You know, if you look at our whole day as a time investment, that's where we lose the most return on our investment. So what I do is I take a couple of hours on Sunday and maybe even another day during the week, and I cook up all the individual components. So I'll roast some chicken or grill some chicken. I'll make hamburger patties. I'll make meatballs. I'll make mashed potatoes and rice. I'll cut up all the vegetables or at least make sure they're all washed and I can slice them up. And I do the poor man's vac seal. I like, you know, put it in a Ziploc and like suck out all the air so that it stays fresher. And I just make sure I make a big soup. I usually do a roast in the morning because it's getting hot. So I get up early and I do that in the morning so the house doesn't get all hot. And nobody wants to sit down to a hot roast in the summer, but it makes excellent, like shredded pot roast makes excellent sandwiches or sliders. So I do all the components and then I keep it in the fridge and then I can just grab from it. I can make a salad if I want. I can just grab food and reheat it. And so during the week, or at least for a good percentage of the meals, I mean, of course, Pascal can help himself now and cook, but when he was little, I would do this too. For a good percentage of the meals, I'm not thinking about anything. It's not elaborate. It's a hunk of chicken with some carrots, with some bell peppers, with some mashed potatoes. It's not elaborate, but it's super easy. And I know he's getting all the things he needs. And that is the best return on investment for your time. And like I said, it's not self-care in the typical sense of like being pampered, but it's self-care because it takes so much off my literal and figurative plate during the week that that's how I do that. And so that's something you might consider if your kids are home for the summer, because it's a game changer. Now, if you feel like your kids are just snacking for boredom, and this especially happens if your child is, I know we're almost all of us negotiating screen time. So, you know, a lot of times what happens is screen time like rolls out of control. And then all of a sudden we're like, oh my God, my kid's watching too much, you know, whatever. And so then we try to reel it in. And then your child sort of feels the pang of screen time that's gone away. And remember, when they're in school, they're being directed 100% of the time, right? They don't have, maybe they have a couple of minutes of free play, but largely they're following directions the whole day. So bear that in mind, because now they're in a free fall. They're like, nobody's telling me what to do, right? And I know it's that way on weekends and vacations, but now it's like a lot of time. So you might get this like, I'm so bored. So one thing you can do, I did this with Pascal especially when he had friends over, because as a single kid, he was pretty self-entertaining on his own, but his friends would come over and they'd all be bored. I don't know why. I don't know how. So I had something I called the board jar. It was a mason jar and we had put popsicle sticks in it and labeled all the popsicle sticks with things. You know, I sat down with Pascal and was like, what would be fun to do? We labeled them all. And then anytime somebody was bored, they'd close their eyes and they'd pick out a popsicle stick and there would be an activity for them to do and they could go and do it. And largely, I would say once they got going on something, it would be a good 2 hours that I wouldn't have to intervene. One of the things out of the board jar that became a perennial favorite, and it was so funny because kids would come over and they'd be like, hey, can I have the board jar? And I'd be like, yeah, sure, here, pick one. And they'd be like, no, I want to pick this one. Like they knew what they wanted to do, but they thought they had to pick it. And it was Marble Runs and Rube Goldberg's. So Rube Goldberg's are, I probably should have looked up the official definition, but they're the things, if you're not familiar with them, they're the contraptions. You've probably seen one at some museum at some point in time or online. They're these contraptions that the motion of something sets something else in motion. So it might be like a marble going down a tube and then it hits a metal thing and the metal thing whacks another ball into water that splashes and then it pops the balloon or something like that. So setting up Rube Goldberg's can be so much fun. That's probably for older kids, but even for younger kids, marble runs. Marble runs are guaranteed to get all ages involved, and they're so much fun. They're going to do a number on your living room. They take up a lot of space, but what you do is you can get wrapping paper rolls, toilet paper rolls, paper towel rolls, egg cartons, all these things we save thinking we're going to do a craft one day. Every mom I know saves these things because we hate to throw them away. But you can use them for marble runs. And you can get painter's tape so they can tape things against the wall without wrecking the wall. And oh my God, it's just hours and hours of fun. And you can slice pool noodles. Pool noodles can be whole, but usually the hole in them isn't big enough for a marble. But if you slice them in half, they become like luges. They're really awesome. So that is an activity that I would say get those set up and it will be a favorite, as is like, you know, building a fort. You can't go wrong with a blanket fort in the living room. On the note of egg cartons and paper towel rolls, don't underestimate the power of your recycling bin. Your recycling bin holds so many treasures that your child might be able to use and recycle. And oftentimes, if you just give kids the materials and don't direct them, don't tell them it's a marble run, don't tell them anything, they'll start playing with it in a really cool, open, imaginative way. So things like Parmesan cheese shakers, any sort of containers, you know, wash them out, of course. These can become like sand toys. These can become water table toys. They can just become so much fun for your child. So definitely go through your recycle bin and see what you got, because there are so many really great things that your child will do with that that will cost you nothing. And so that can really, really, really curb the I'm bored thing. All right, let's jump into some questions. Okay, first one. Help with all the end of school activities, field trips, field day, carnival, assemblies. How do I help my son manage all the excitement and change in routine? Last year, he wasn't able to regulate and ruined his own time on purpose. Now, I followed up and said, what makes you think he did this on purpose? And she said, okay, maybe on purpose was the wrong word. He was so dysregulated that he, quote unquote, chose to sit out and not participate. Again, chose in the way that he was unable to regulate himself and therefore unable to participate. His dysregulation presents as self-sabotage, so it feels like it's on purpose, even though I know he's not in control at those times. Okay, so let's break this down because I think this is a really important one, not just for like the end of school activities, but any situation in which your child easily becomes dysregulated because of noise, because of stimulation, because so much is going on. It's a different routine. You know, how, what's more exciting than a carnival at school where I usually have to sit at my desk and now I'm at carnival? Like, this is mind blowing. And I know the last month of school is particularly trying. I have been homeschooling Pascal. He's going to be 17 in a week. And I took him out of first grade. And it is the last month of kindergarten is still seared in my memory. It is so jarring. The last month of school, it's like, oh my God, what am I supposed to dress my kid as? What are we doing today? So I totally sympathize with you. So there's two ways to look at this. There's one way that he is doing it on purpose. And then there's another way to look at it and say he's getting dysregulated. When we get dysregulated, particularly a child, there is very little choice going on there. So I would probably err on the side of he's dysregulated and therefore has to sit out. But let's just pretend for a second that there's a part of him that is dysregulating so that he can, quote unquote, choose to sit out. Let's give him an option to sit out so he doesn't have to dysregulate. If we build in an option for a child to take a break when they need to take a break, then maybe he won't have to dysregulate and act however he's acting that gets him in trouble, I'm assuming. So I think it's a really good idea to make contact with the teacher as these activities ramp up and, you know, come up with a code word. Pascal and I, our code word for everything was applesauce. So you might tell the teacher, look, I think this kid, I think he's just getting overstimulated and I think he wants to participate, but he gets so excited that he can't help himself. Is there an opportunity for him to sit out if he needs to sit out? And he could say to her, applesauce, and then she would know, okay, maybe, hey, buddy, I can't leave the room with you, but could you come on over here, take a second, let's breathe a little bit. Maybe a teacher's aide could help. I know, you know, ratios in classrooms can be scant. So you know, depending on your situation. But I would definitely also talk to the child and say, hey, bud, you know, it's crazy. Like when I go to carnival day at school, like it's like, oh my God, so much is going on and I might need a break. So if you need a break, why don't you just take, you know, you can step back from the people, give him options. I don't know what carnival looks like. I don't know what these choices are, but I do think the key here is to make a plan with the child. And of course, this child, you're saying last year. So I'm assuming kindergarten first, it's first or second grade. So this child has some awareness that we could talk to him like this. You can take a break when you need to. And it's even better if you can talk ahead with the teacher and they can arrange something so that as he does start to dysregulate, perhaps he can advocate for himself to take a break away from all the activity. I think, though, what's more likely happening is that he's dysregulating and not recognizing it and not doing it on purpose because, I mean, I think of me as an adult and I get easily dysregulated in hyperstimulation. I get excited and my excitement makes me dysregulate. It's not even like a funky emotion. It's like too much excitement and joy. And I want to do all the things. And like before a big party, I have to take a dropper of CBD so I can chill out and be human because otherwise I'm like an alien and I talk too fast and I'm a little whirling dervish. So I really feel for these kids. And I feel like had they had carnival days in my school, I would have been a dysregulated kid. I hate to be all boomer. I'm not a boomer. I'm a Gen X, but I talk like a boomer because we didn't have fun things like that in my school. It was a long time ago. We played with rocks and we were happy about it. But I can easily see how stimulating this can be for a child, especially a sensitive child. And maybe you also want to run through what is it that makes him. So he may not know the word dysregulated. So that's another point is you might want to get to, are you excited? Are you upset? Is it overwhelming? Is it too much? So maybe try to get to the root. A lot of times it's auditory, like an assembly. That's a lot of noise in a live room. And so it's like, you know, and you can really start to lose your shit because it's an auditory overstimulation. I can imagine that a carnival setting, even as, you know, it's, I'm sure an elementary school carnival, it still can be like visually overstimulating, you know, or is he so excited that he doesn't know what to do with his energy? And so getting to the real emotion under the dysregulation, I think would go a long way. And then you could role play a little bit of like, okay, well, when you're really excited, what could you do to get rid of that energy so you don't push people or you don't, I don't know, whatever his behavior displays in school. But I think a lot of pre-planning would help with that. Okay, next question. I have a kindergartner who struggles with transitions and loves routine. Any tips on helping him go from the order of school to the chaos of summer camp? And this child has no break between school and summer camp except one weekend. All right, Mama. The one thing I would say again, like I said to the last question, was I would pre-plan. So kids get very regimented in their routine and a lot of kids struggle with transitions. And the best thing you can do is set up ahead of time as much as you can. So the first thing I would do is contact the camp director. Let that person know that your son does struggle with transitions and you're anticipating a rocky ride for the first day or two. I would also say, if you have a chance, do you think you could snap a couple of pictures of the campgrounds, of where they're going to be, where they're going to eat lunch? Is there a waterfront? Are there arts and crafts? Are there different halls? Whatever the setup is going to be. And we did this. This was a very effective strategy, by the way, again, during lockdowns. When the kids went from lockdown back to school, a lot of kids had never been to school or had forgotten about school. And so we had a lot of success contacting teachers or principals or directors and having them just snap some pictures so that the parents could then show the child the picture, be like, okay, so now at camp, it's going to be way different than school. At school, when you go in the doors, you sit down and do circle time. At camp, you're going to be over by the water. You're going to be outside. And that way you can kind of do a compare and contrast. You also want to do over the weekend, like a whiteboard setup. Whiteboards for transitions are so key. They're so helpful. Even if your child doesn't read, it gives them a sequence of orders. You can write it or you can do stick figures or drawings or pictures. And you can say, this is what camp looks like. this is what you're going to do. And I would also ask the camp director if you could have a rough outline of what the day looks like so you can prepare your child. This goes a long way. And a lot of parents fear that they're being a pain in the ass when they do stuff like this. But honestly, I think camp directors and counselors really do appreciate having a heads up and knowing that you're being proactive about that. So like, hey, I'm letting you know that my kid might have a hard time, but also can you help me out so I can help him have less of a hard time? I mean, what's better than that? You know, I do think that a lot of camp counselors, sometimes you're stuck with some young kids who may not have skills, right? But I think generally speaking, the first week of camp, like the first week of school, it's kind of an all hands on deck situation. And they're pretty used to some rocky starts. Like there's a lot of kids who melt down. It's a new surrounding. A lot of kids have accidents. This even happens in kindergarten and in sometimes first grade. So a lot of things are really rocky that first week. So just know that they're generally prepared for that. And so your kid probably won't be the only one who's having a hard time with the transition. Okay, next question. Wanting to keep the education going over the summer, such as reading and writing, but also wanting them to just run feral and relax and play. I am team run feral and relax and play. All right, I'm going to take this from two points. One is mine and one is what I think the rest of the world expects, which is always different. So I get so angry about this because these kids go to school. Especially now, it's so academic focused. There's less and less recess in most schools. There's silent lunches in a lot of schools. Kindergarten is like between first and second grade, even like 10 years ago. The focus on academics is so hardcore. So I just feel like summer is summer is summer. Go run, be feral. But here's the thing. Even though you're saying be feral, I can almost guarantee that anybody listening to this is not just letting their kids go feral, which by the way, I think feral kids learn so much, but honestly, you're going to go places. You're going to go to museums. You're going to have play dates. You're going to have your kids help. You're going to go strawberry picking these things. You know what I mean? Like you're going to be doing things with your kids and you're going to be reading. I wouldn't get upset unless you have stringent, you know, like your kids in an older grade and they have to read X, Y, and Z. Which even then, I don't appreciate. But taking it from the viewpoint of, are there expectations? Are there standards? I really take the approach of, let them be as free as they can. Now, if they need to do some practice, you can do some practice. And there's another question coming up that I'll talk a little bit more about that. But also know, I unschooled Pascal his whole school career. And now that he is in high school, he's going to be a senior next year. He's actually going to the community college and taking classes. He learned to write. He learned to read. We never sat down and I never made him do any of that. But by reading ourselves, he wasn't a reader for a long time. He didn't enjoy reading. And now he can't get enough of it. He loves it. He loves historical fiction. He loves like inspirational, you know, guys who have had really horrible childhoods and like really made something of themselves. And he likes those sort of inspirational stories. So it happens. Now I realize that I have unschooled his whole school career. So I had the capability of saying it happens. He didn't have to be at a certain level when he went back to school. So in that case, I would check out ahead. Like if, again, it's really weird because we're talking about many, many different ages, but I'm assuming most of these kids are in elementary school. I would say, are there expectations? Like, what are your expectations? Because they'll be like, oh, make sure they practice reading and writing. Great. Okay. We'll do that. Right. But if their expectation is your child who is piecing together words should be reading chapter books by the end of summer, you need to know that. I don't approve of that, but you should be clear about what the expectations are. But don't underestimate all the things that are learned in life, just living life. And again, I'm pretty sure no one who's listening to me is plopping their kid in front of a TV all day or just like neglecting their kids all day and not attending to life. And there's just so much to be learned in your daily activity. So I really wouldn't worry about that. One fun thing we used to do is we'd set a theme for the summer. So you could also do a summer bucket list, which is super fun. And that can include a lot of learning. We would do a food. So we would try to find like the best ice cream cone. So we would go everywhere and we made a spreadsheet and we do compare and contrast and we'd ask for ingredients. I just made up stuff. We'd be like, oh, how does it feel on your tongue? What are the flavors? And so he'd have to like write on his chart. And so I never said, write. I never said we're practicing writing, but he was really excited to like mark his things. And then he wanted to like publish a book about it. I was like, okay, buddy, I don't know how well that would sell. It's like very specific to Rhode Island, but you could do pizza. You could do taco trucks or food trucks. You could do, you know, any sort of like theme and then set up a spreadsheet and have compare and contrast. And it's just a fun way to get pen to paper and practice the letters and practice X's and also how to do a spreadsheet. It's kind of a cool thing. So that's a fun activity. But yes, learning happens all the time, just all the time. Okay, so here's the next question. Transitioning from pre-K to kindergarten and they're wanting him to keep writing every day. How much will keep him on track without causing him to be bored or fuss? Oh, and then the constant summer snacking. Yep, snacking. So transitioning from pre-K to kindergarten and they want writing every day. Okay, I hate it. However, it must be done. So there are many things you can do besides writing. And one thing, you know, Mr. Rogers is famous for saying work. I think it was Mr. Rogers. Work is the play of childhood. And that's not just a cute saying. It's not just a cute saying that that's what they do. They play, we work. It literally is the work of childhood. And I've spoken about this in so many episodes. There are physical things, musculature that has to be formed in order to be able to sit still and focus. And those are your core. And by core, I don't mean abdominals. I mean your entire trunk and the three fingers. If we count the thumb as a finger, right? Your thumb, your forefinger, and your middle finger. That pinch grip is necessary for writing. If your child hasn't developed that, or if their core is weak and they can't sit straight over a desk to have penmanship, good or bad penmanship, or they're really wiggly, they don't have the musculature. So it's criminal right now that we're taking away so much playtime for kids and then making them do the thing that the playtime would have helped. And it's not just about getting the wiggles out. It's not just about energy expenditure. It's about musculature. So a couple of things you can do to support writing without actually making writing happen is tape and scissors. And by tape, I mean your child taking the tape off the roll. The harder the tape, the more those muscles have to work. So like masking tape or duct tape, scotch tape, go nuts. I did an Instagram reel about this like a long time ago. I'll keep reposting it. When Pascal went to preschool, they had a whole table of tape and Pascal just loved taping. He loved taping. And I was like, he uses so much tape. And one of the teachers looked at me and she was like, how many toys does he have? And I looked at her and she was like, go nuts, like buy a case of tape. And I was like, oh, right. Like we get so afraid of wasting tape, but is it wasting if they're playing with it? It's building muscles and it's doing something for like their musculature for writing. It's not a waste. So don't be afraid of wasting tape and scissors. Get them cutting. And just having a table with tape and scissors and paper and letting them go to town, that is building the muscles needed for writing. Now for the core stuff, three really great playthings are leapfrog, crab walk, and wheelbarrow. So if you're unfamiliar with those, I don't know how to describe crab walk. It's like if you're sitting on the ground on your butt and you lift your butt off, your hands are behind you and your feet, you lift your butt almost like you'd be doing a bridge, but you can walk around like that. So that's crab walk. Wheelbarrow is when you take the child's ankles and their hands are on the ground and now their feet are in your hands and they have to kind of walk on their hands. That's wheelbarrow. And then leapfrog is literally just leaping over another child. But you could, if you don't want to do leapfrog like that, you could do, or if there aren't enough kids, you could just have a race like down the street or down, you know, down your driveway or your backyard or park, wherever you can go. These three are super great for building that core, building that trunk, as well as climbing, hanging, going up the slide. I just heard from a client that there's a playground there in their neighborhood that there's two slides and one is the upslide and one is the downslide. And I was like, oh my God, we're getting somewhere with the upslide. So full body play. Again, if you want to go back to the proprioception and vestibular movement, gosh, that might've been my fourth podcast ever. I talk a lot about that. It is big play has to do with moving your whole body. Running is not big play. Yes, it will exhaust your child, but it is not big play. We really want that like climbing, using, twisting. That's what's going to build that core. And that is what is going to help with penmanship. Now, if you do want to practice, a really great way to practice, kids can really sense when we want to make them do something, and that's when they resist. They're just pros at sensing that. So one thing that you could do, I don't know if you do anything anymore with analog writing or if it's all on the computer, but I used to do this with Pascal, is I'd say, okay, I have to do my bills. And I would sit down at the table and I'd have, you know, markers, crayons, pencils, pens, paper, all different kinds of paper. And I would sit and I was like, I have to do my paperwork. So I would, I'd sit down and do my bills or my calendar or my schedule. I can't do anything on the computer. My calendar is still a block calendar. And I still write out my schedule on a yellow legal pad with a pen, but I would sit and do my quote unquote paperwork. And he would come and sit and say he had to do his paperwork and he would start writing. So I think that's a really cool way of practicing writing. I do think too that it's really tricky to make a kid write when there's no impetus to write. It's like a meaningless practice. And I've told this story before, but in Pascal's preschool, it seemed to me that he was lagging behind in penmanship. He was making squiggles and it seemed like everybody else was making letters. So I asked the teacher, I was like, you know, like, is he behind? And she was like, behind? No, he's not behind at all. And I was like, yeah, but it's like squiggles. And she said, those aren't squiggles. She said, look, there's six characters. And I looked closely. I hadn't noticed. And there were six distinct squiggles. And she said, there are six characters in his name. And I was like, oh, I never thought of it that way. And I was like, yeah, but still, it's not really writing. But then she went around to the other kids and she was like, hey, whose artwork is this? And the other kids were like, oh, that's Pascal's. Oh, that's Pascal's. That's Pascal's. And she was like, see, they know his signature. And I was like, okay. And sure enough, like over a couple of months, those squiggles turned into a P and an A and, you know, they were lopsided and wrong and weird. And she told me, she said, listen, the only reason you have any impetus to write, the very first thing you want to write is your name. And that is because of ownership. And you write your name in school because you have to distinguish your paper from the next for the teacher, right? Or even for yourself. This is mine. This is my artwork, right? And even as adults, when do you put your name on things? This is my check. This is my will. This is my document, right? Other than that, we don't sign our names. It's for ownership. So think of that. Like when your child is struggling, sometimes it's just because it's arbitrary. It's like, why are you making me write this? It's just like, oh, okay, I just have to practice. Like it's really hard to explain to a five-year-old. Well, you just have to practice. That's all. So, you know, maybe you say, oh, you know, I want to show somebody and you need to put your name on it. You could sort of manufacture a reason that they need ownership or, you know, put it on here since it's going to be a childhood memory. And I don't want to forget that you drew it and not your sister. I don't know, something like that, right? But it's really worth considering when we make kids do things, like, is there a reason? And can we make up a reason? But generally speaking, I'd be much more inclined to say as much play as possible, as little writing as possible, you know, except for when you can do it with like effort. If your child is fussing, if your child can't sit still, that means they need more play. So if you're finding that the child's getting aggravated, I don't think that's worth pushing. You're just going to make them hate it and it's going to be yucky. Okay, next question. Burning question. Can I send my 7-year-old ADHD kid to you for the weeks there is no camp? Kidding, not kidding. You know, honestly, this has long been a dream of mine. I have always wanted to run a feral camp for kids. And that is why I bought land. But it's not going to happen for at least 2 years. But I'll let you guys know if I get it going. See, I envision, well, really, I want a commune where we can all just parent together. And our kids can parent themselves and be feral. But I want a place where the kids can go and the moms can sit and have coffee and just talk and maybe knit or, I don't know, do fun things, relaxing things, and I'll cook for you all. I would love to get that off the ground. How do I parent them all and work from home and limit screen time? Okay, this again, all of these questions are really bringing me back to lockdowns and the pandemic. And this was, oh my God, this was like the question. And I'll never forget, I don't know if you guys even remember, it was so bizarre those first few months. And I had people contacting me, literally saying, I have to work 8 hours on Zoom. I have a 2-year-old I need her to play independently for 8 hours. What can I do? And I was like, nothing. There's no way a two-year-old is going to play independently for that long. And I was like, I'd put Frozen on repeat. And they were like, no, I'm not doing screen time. And I was like, okay, then you're fucked. There was no way out of that. There was no way. We were under lockdown. These parents had to work. And don't get me started on the state of childcare and maternal care and the US. It was ugly. You have to do what you have to do. And I know we all really try super hard to limit screen time, but if you have to work and the kids have to be home, and like, I'm assuming you don't have a big farm where they can go down to the creek and be Tom Sawyer for the summer, right? You might have to employ screen time, and that's okay. When we look at screen time, remember, it doesn't have to be mindless consumption. There are really fun things online, like Stack the States is one I'm thinking of. I love Minecraft in creative mode. It's algebraic concepts. It's a pretty cool thing, as long as the survival mode gets sort of wonky, but the creative mode is like digital Legos. There was one called like, there's tinkering ones that are cool, and they almost are those digital versions of the Rube Goldberg. They're super fun, but you can find things that are stimulating, you know, utilizing a screen, but that aren't consumption. Chess and solitaire are great games online for kids. Pascal plays chess online all the time and loves playing against the computer. And so you don't necessarily, it doesn't necessarily have to be mindless programming. It can be stimulating. What I would avoid, any app that claims to be educational, usually I find to be kind of crappy. Anything that lights up the dopamine. So that would be anything with ding, 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 you won, or gold stars. Or there are these ones, I remember Pascal had one that was like, it was like a cat. I don't know, you got like an animal and it got a house. And then by playing the game, you won these prizes, but you had to log back in within a certain amount of time, or the cat lost the collar, or it was designed to make a kid anxious to log back in. So you want to watch things like that. But generally speaking, I think you can find some cool things. The other thing is you might want to schedule screen time, especially if you have mixed ages. You know, maybe you have an important meeting at 2 and you say, okay, everybody, we're going to watch a family movie. I have to work. We're going to stay here. Here's your snacks. Y'all just got to be quiet for mommy. And that's about all you can do. This is one of those things. We can't do it all, you guys. We can't do it all. We can strive for our best, but sometimes we have to utilize screen time. And you know what? Fuck off for people who like get really mad about this, because back in the day, you're like, what did we do before screens? Well, before we had screens, we had villages. Before we had screens, we were closer together. We had cross-generational households. We had smaller neighborhoods. Kids could play outside. We didn't have organized sports. The kids ran in the neighborhood together. Big kids took care of little kids. Like, we can't compare apples and oranges. Before we had screens was a different time. I lived in the 80s. We didn't have screens. But man, we got into a fair amount of shit. I was smoking a cigarette at 11 years old. So, you know, pick your poison here. You know what I'm saying? You want your kids playing in the neighborhood with the big kids, which I think would be awesome. I don't want them smoking at 11. But like, I feel like we get so much shit for, you know, screen time. And I know some kids get wonky with it, but you can't do it all. You can't work from home, parent, make the food, and entertain your kids and make sure they're all like lined up with activities. Like, you can't do that. Nobody can. So be easy on yourself and kind of work however your schedule works. You might have to squeeze in some screen time there. All right. Next question. The next two, I think, kind of play in together. How to handle the transition of some family members being home, my daughter 7 and my husband who's a teacher, while my 3-year-old son still goes to daycare twice a week and I still work, especially for my son, who I know will be jealous now of his sister being home going to camp. So this is like a family situation that you can't change, and there's not much you can do about it, to be honest. I don't know. Are you sure your son would be jealous? Like at 3, I don't know that he has the whole understanding of she's home and he's not. Like, I'm sure there were days that she had a holiday and he had to go to daycare. You know, so sometimes I think we project a bigger emotion on a little one than they might be feeling. But regardless, even if he's jealous, he has to go to school. And so maybe the first week might be wonky. But if she's going to camp, there's no reason. I just don't think his 3-year-old brain is going to compute like, oh, she's going to camp and she gets to go swimming and I'm still at daycare twice a week. I don't know that he has that capacity. just as she might get excited about coming home with her artwork from school, like she might come home excited about artwork from camp, you know, you might ask her, have a private conversation of like, hey, let's tone down the excitement so little guy doesn't, you know, start to get upset. But I wouldn't really worry too much about it, to be honest. Again, I don't know that he'll be upset. And if he is, it's one of those things that like, well, what can you do? You can't make it better for him. And you're like, bud, that's how it is. Daddy's home. He's a teacher. You still go to school. Mommy still goes to work. That's what we got to do. I wish I had a better answer, but I just don't. There's just not a whole lot you can do. You can sympathize with him and say, I know it sucks. You have to go to school and she gets to stay home. And well, the next time she'll have to go to school and you can stay home. Okay. How do I help kids at different developmental stages get the activities and play they need? For example, the older kid wants to do Legos and science experiments, but it seems like the only time we can do them is during the toddler's nap because she is a tornado. And I would love to use the afternoon nap time as quiet time so I can have a break too. Okay, first and foremost, I guess this one more ties into like, how do I parent them and limit screen time? First and foremost, you absolutely get a break. So let's build that into the schedule first. And so you have to get a break throughout the day if your kids are at home. And I feel like if your kids are at home all the time or you're a homeschooler, that's one of the first things you have to figure out is like, how can we all get the time we need? There's a couple of ways to approach this. Now, with the tornado child, number one, tornado child might be sensory seeking. Yes, which is awesome, but let's meet that need. So maybe her tornado slows to a hurricane. I know that's not how it works, but let's give her a lot of times, and I say this in, oh crap, I have a toddler, a lot of times a kid who appears to be quote unquote bad or like extra, which I love that term instead of bad, like, oh, she's extra, is because they're bored and they're looking for things. And remember, second kids kind of come into the world with more of a YOLO. They come into the world like knowing more. You know, your first kid always is like, duh. You know, actually they tend to be like smarter, actually, you know, do well better. They're more perfectionistic. So they tend to do better in school and things like that. But the second kid comes in, it's almost like they've already read Harry Potter or something. You know, they come into the world like, all right, I'm ready for it. And so make sure that you have great activities for her. And by great activities, I don't mean to buy things. It could be, can you set her up at the kitchen sink with, you know, soapy water and some plastic dishes? That often keeps kids occupied forever. Painting with water. You just have water and the kid can paint along, you know, paint the floor, paint anything, you know, not spilling it, of course, but just painting glass. A lot of kids did that during the pandemic. If you have any glass, they can just paint it. They can wash the windows. You'll have to go back and do it again. But there's so many things that can occupy them. And a lot of times it's real life things. Can you get the older child involved? So sometimes, especially if we're sensitive to, if we ourselves were made to babysit younger siblings, I see a dynamic where parents don't want the older child to have to care for the younger child at all, because you have a memory of that being, you know, it wounded you in some way. So make sure though, the older child will benefit from responsibility. And so it doesn't have to be that the older child is caring for the younger child, but it could be that the older child is sharing skills with that child. So maybe they can make sandwiches together at lunchtime. Maybe they can work on certain things together. You know, you could rope the older child into, hey, can you do Legos with her just for a couple of minutes and then go to your room? I think it's fair in older, younger dynamics, like especially 3 and 7 with a 4-year gap. I think it's really fair to give the older child some time alone. So maybe the older child can go and do his Legos or her Legos in the other room and you will be occupied with the toddler. I think science experiments are tricky. I'm assuming that you're not doing like anything with acid or but I think there are so many great science experiments that you can do with a toddler that don't make a mess, you know, but then there are ones that do make messes. Who doesn't love baking soda and vinegar? There are some really cool, Steve Spangler has a website and that's Kitchen Science. And there are some really cool science experiments on there that a toddler would probably be in awe of and not necessarily tornado her way through it. I will say this too, that science experiments are super fun. They're super fun to do all summer long. And for the younger child, what you might want to do is get a pair of goggles. They sell like these little science kits that you can buy. They're pretty reasonable. You know, they have like droppers and beakers, but sometimes when you have the gear, it changes the tornado, right? So if you're like, okay, we're going to do a science experiment, you need to put your goggles on even if it's baking soda and vinegar. And like, then the child will like, oh, you know, it's that thing I talk about, rising to the tie, rising to the outfit. So that's an idea. I do think too, with younger kids, it's really important to set up some sensory bins, and these do not have to be extensive. They don't have to be expensive. They can be in a shoebox. They don't have to even be store-bought bins. Save all your Amazon boxes, all of them from here on out for the rest of the summer. Make pirate ships and houses and whatnot. But set them up. You can use rice. A big one is rice with like little objects that the child has to find. You can do, I saw a really cute one online where they took a bowl, they took some figurines, like dinosaur things, cars, put it in the water, froze it, and then they took it out and they were like, oh no, Elsa came to visit. And they gave the child some sort of safe chipping device, and the child had to like chip away at the ice to get the things out. I thought that was a cute idea. I think there's a ton of things. You can look up hashtag Montessori or Monty Kids that have some really great Montessori ideas that you can use with everyday objects, so that, you know, you don't have to buy the expensive, beautiful, aesthetic, beige Montessori products. You can use paper towel rolls or elastic bands or whatever. But there's definitely some things that we want to do that will maybe slow down the tornado. I think there's two things at play. One, she's young. And two, if she's a tornado, maybe she's looking for something more. I think having bins, though, with like themes to them, maybe it's cars, maybe it's Duplos, maybe it's clay and kinetic sand, so that she could potentially choose something while the older child's doing his things. I think, again, one of the things when we have the kids at home and we're also thinking of like keep them stimulated, educate them. Remember that summer can be a time of slow. It can be a time of ice cream. It can be a time of sprinklers. Like, we can bring it way down. And I really encourage that. The kids need a break. School, again, has gotten very, very intense. And so you got to give yourself a break. And if you need screen time, you need screen time. If you need everybody to go to their room for quiet time, that can happen too. If you need to put a snack charcuterie board out that sits out all day long because you just can't keep going to the kitchen, I think that's okay. We have to give each other like some slack, give ourselves slack, right? Because it's jarring. You didn't have your kids. They were in school and now they're home. And I don't want anybody going crazy. Summer should be fun. Again, I sound like a boomer, but I think I spent a whole summer just talking into a fan thinking I was a robot and reading A Tree Grows in Brooklyn. And that was good enough. So slow it down. Don't be crazy. Be engaged with your kids. If you don't have to work from home while you're trying to parent, you know, slow days. If you do have to work, be easy on yourself and do what you need to do. So that's all I got for today. If you guys have any other questions, feel free to comment on Instagram, or if you're a patron, you can comment on Patreon. I would love to expand on this issue. I think the more tips and help we can give each other, things that have worked, things that have occupied your kids, the more the better. I'd be happy to do another follow-up episode on this. And if you're not a patron, it's only a dollar to join. So we have ad-free podcasts there and some additional little goodies. And oh my goodness, I didn't plan on this being that long. All right, you guys, as always, rock on. I appreciate you and have a great day.
Okay, bye, everyone. Just a reminder, if you need additional resources, I have Oh Crap Potty Training. I have Oh Crap, I Have a Toddler. Those books are available everywhere you want to find a book. You can also go to my website, jamieglowacki.com, where you can book private sessions with me, buy any of my courses. Those are really geared towards potty training help. And also, I'm on Instagram. I'm not on Facebook anymore, and I'm not on Twitter. I'm on Instagram, jamie.glowacki, and I do a lot of lives and usually posting a lot of good information. So those are extra resources for you. And as always, rock on. Have an awesome day.